Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and a very warm welcome. This is the Motormouth podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Tim Sylvie, where in each show we sit down with a figure from the world of motorsports and dive into how exactly they ended up where they are now. F1 champions, team principals, Formula E and touring car stars. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they'll usually tell it right here. Motormouth is an app and website where you can catch up with all the latest F1 gossip at motormouth.club and view live timings across a race weekend with our app. We're also proud to be partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure through events like our annual karting race, where you can go head-to-head against professional drivers, all to raise vital funds. For more info, check out motormouthkartrace.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today we have two lots of sad news, listeners. First, that Seb is retiring from Formula One at the end of the year. But far more importantly, this is the last show that Harry will be alongside me for a few weeks. He's off for an intense period of commentary duties. So, Harry, I wanted to wish you well on your well-deserved adventures with Sky Sports, BBC F1 and all the rest of it. We look forward to you coming back. But how are you feeling about both bits of news?
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I will miss being on the show for a little bit, but it won't be the last time, that's for sure. I've got to run off to the commentary box after this for practice one. So I've got to get him hurry on. And in terms of the Seb news, I mean, I was really sad by it. I thought the Instagram was really emotional. And what a way to do it. Drops in the Instagram for the first time ever. 2 million followers later, retires. Sad, but I think kind of like a happy sad. So,
good for him. He's got a lot of things to look forward to, I'm sure. Now, we've already mentioned it on socials, and as I mentioned, Harry is leaving us for a few weeks, but we'll be back. But we've drafted in a super sub in the form of Tom McCluskey. Some of you might know him better as Tomo F1. He's going to be keeping Harry's seat warm while he's away. Right, back to business. So today we're joined by a racing driver who currently pedals his wares behind the wheel of the Williams Formula One car. And Harry, as such, I thought I'd test you briefly on your Williams F1 knowledge. So here we go. Question one. Who was the first driver to win the world championship for Williams?
I want to say it was maybe like Keke Rosberg, but I think there was somebody before him.
Well before you were born.
Was it someone like Alan Jones or somebody like that? Or
if I had a button with a round of applause, I'd be playing it right now. 1980, correct. They also took the Constructors' Championship that year, and he was the first Aussie to win the World Championship since Jack Brabham in 1966, the year that we obviously won the World Cup. Number two.
The next one better be a Pastor Maldonado-related question.
I'm afraid not. Who is Williams' most recent world champion?
I think that was the year I was born, so 97, and that would have been Villeneuve.
Well done.
Nailed it.
Well done. Let's move on. Yeah, Jacques Villeneuve. Yeah, it was Jacques' first and only drivers' championship. They won the constructors that year as well for the ninth time. Anyway, well done. Two out of two. Very impressed. Shall we introduce today's guest? Just before we get into that, bear with me for 2 minutes. I must tell you about our new sponsors of the show, and it's one that means a great deal to us all on a very personal level here at the Motormouth podcast. In 2021, Dana, the founder of Motus One, passed away suddenly and without warning whilst visiting family in the States. Dana was one of my very best friends. The legacy he left with his family and his business is incredible, and I'm hugely humbled and proud to have his booming business as part of this show. Sponsors are vital for our survival, and make sure we continue to bring you interviews with the biggest names in racing. So if you or your company needs event transportation, look no further than the team at Motus One. They have you covered anywhere in the world, from a single chauffeur-driven sedan to a fleet of luxury SUVs, Teslas, or motor coaches. Find your transportation solution with Motus One. They've got offices worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe, and Africa, and will support your transportation needs regardless of location. Motus One is committed to world-class service at the very best rates to ensure your event goes off without a hitch. Contact them at motusone.com. We'll put all their social links in the podcast description. A massive, massive thanks to Dana, his wife Claudia, his kids, the rest of the Motus One team. Thank you for having faith in our show and joining us for season 12. Right, back to it. On with the show.
I think so. Let's get on with it. He'll know more than I do on Matt Williams' knowledge.
Well, you are an encyclopedia.
He's shaking his head.
Today, we're joined by Alex Albon. Alex has come up through the junior ranks of racing, narrowly missing out on the 2016 GP3 title, finishing runner-up to Charles Leclerc. He continued his progress through F2 before graduating to Formula One with Toro Rosso, earning a mid-season call-up to the big boys at Red Bull Racing alongside Max Verstappen. We find him now leading the charge at Williams alongside our former podcast guest, Nicholas Latifi. We're here to chat about his life, thoughts, career and opinions, and also fire a couple of listener questions at him. Alex Albon, a very warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much. Hello everyone.
Did you know the answers, Alex, to those questions?
No, not at all. I mean,
wow.
I was impressed by the first one, and then the second one I was a bit more confident in, and I was like, Stephen Hill, must be Stephen Hill. and then you said Villeneuve, and I was like, yeah, he's right.
Makes more sense. Yeah. Thank God they don't make you do a test before you sign a contract about Williams' history. Before we dive into all things about you, I think we do, I'm sure you've been asked about it already, but we are recording this on the Friday of the Hungarian Grand Prix. News just breaking yesterday, of course, that Sebastian Vettel is retiring. Have you got a few words to say on that?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think, you know, most people must probably see him as the driver, which we all do as well. You know, I looked up to him. I remember his first race. Or noticeable race for me was Toro Rosso when he was leading and won the race in the wet. That was a pretty iconic moment, and stayed with me when I was a kid. But then on top of that, I think what especially for the drivers, you know, he was a true ambassador for us, and he has a very good way with words. He pushes safety. He pushes topics that, you know, a lot of drivers don't always want to talk about, and he sees the big picture. And think, you know, as a racing driver, he's obviously an inspiration. But even outside of that, I think he leads a very good role model. He is a very good role model for young drivers, for young people in general, to look up to. And yeah, I'm excited to see what he does in the future. I think he's obviously become more and more outspoken. Almost, I see him as an activist now, and I'm interested to see what this new chapter leads into. I think obviously he's got an Instagram account, which is pretty interesting. I didn't think he would ever do it,
no.
But there it is. And I'm sure he won't be posting too many memes, but I imagine it will be a little bit more towards the...
Has he followed your cat account yet, the pet account?
Has he? Well, I need to tell him.
Yeah, exactly.
If he isn't, then that's not good enough, is it?
It's frankly not.
Before he runs out of the paddock.
Yeah, exactly. Please follow me.
Seb, wait, hang on. I think what he's done off track has really elevated actually what he'd already achieved on track. So he leaves the Formula One circus as one of the most, I think, revered characters now. But let's dive into you and your career, which is what the Motormouth podcast is all about. And usually the first question we ask is, well, where did it all start? What was the first moment, or was it a moment on track? Was it a person in the family where you just went, right, I want to be a racing driver?
Yes. So really, it all started with the love for cars. That's the very beginning. My first words were Rari and smokes. Smokes were exhausts. So whenever I saw a car with four exhausts, I would shout, smokes, smokes. And if I saw a red car, I would shout, Rari. So it was ingrained into me at a very early age. And that was it. You know, I mean, I was completely, completely obsessed with anything racing related. I watched everything. I mean, everything. I remember even watching the Tweenies when I was a kid, and there was an episode where they were driving cars, and I would have that thing on what do you even call them now? VHS tapes?
Yeah.
And I would just replay that thing nonstop. And even to the point where, you know, as a kid or growing up, I would have tantrums or whatever. And my mum would just put in like 99 championship review, and it would be just every race from that year, and she'd put on a race that Michael Schumacher would win, and that would calm me down, and that was like her way of stopping me from escalating my tantrums. So yeah, it was within me from the very beginning.
It's funny, isn't it? It just completely within you for some reason, and having that, what a nice way to calm your children down, to put a historic F1 race.
That's the
on.
Thing is, like, I think that year was Mika and Michael fighting for the championship, and I even then, like, if you know, sometimes I'd sit in watch a race, calm down, and then the next race would be Mika winning a race, and it would just make me mad, and I just like, no. Run up to the TV, fast forward it, get past that race. Okay, yeah. The next one's a good one. I know that.
That's so cool. So yeah. Well, let's jump forward many years from there to 2019. You get to F1, Toro Rosso. How did it feel to get that big break? Do you remember the emotions you were feeling?
Yeah. So the build up to it was what made it so emotional, I'd say, because 2018 I was in Formula 2. I was having a good year. I was obviously fighting George and Lando for the championship. And at the time, I was a free agent, but no one was interested in me. And I was kind of in this weird position where, you know, I was waiting for the driver market to move around with a very small glimmer of hope that something would happen. But it was quite clear at the time that nothing was ever going to work out. And so I signed a Formula E deal. And that was kind of my future. You know, I was heading towards electric racing and the first year of being a professional. So I couldn't be mad about it. But of course, you know, you build up your whole life wanting to be an F1 driver, but then you have to leave that bit behind. So, you know, that was it. I wasn't too sad about it. But then the call came through from Dr. Marco, and he said, well, you know, there's a space here. Are you interested? Which of course you are. And it all happened so late, you know. I was announced in, kind of got told just after Abu Dhabi about this whole thing being a possibility. And then that was it. You know, I was in the first, we had our winter testing in Barcelona, and I was strapped into the car and away I went. It felt like from kind of December of that 2018 period to the first race, it was just a blur. It happened all so quickly.
It is very special, and we've asked this question to a few different people who have driven Formula One cars, but you know, up until that point you're driving different types of machinery, F3, F2 and so on. When you strap yourself into the F1 car for the first time, put your foot on the throttle as you come out the pits, what's that like? That can you put into words that the feeling of power that you have at your disposal?
Yeah, so I'd say the first thing you do is you need to get confident straight away. You know, there's no point messing around and getting up to speed. You just need to hit it. So I remember my first day, my first lap, I came out the pit lane, you know, took the pit limiter off and just went, okay, just floor it. You know, you got to see what it does. Get it over with. And of course, in the beginning, it's like, oh my God, you know, this thing's quick. But the speed, you're like, okay, I can deal with this. Like, it's quicker than an F2 car, but it's not blow you away quick. But then you hit the brake pedal, the whole thing just slams down still. And I think it's still the one thing which it's very hard to get people to understand is how quick these cars are in corners. Because you can see straight line speed and everyone asks you, you know, what's your top speed? How quick can you go down the straight? And a Formula One car isn't that quick down the straight, relatively speaking, compared to its corner speed. You know, if you look at a road car compared to a Formula One car around a corner, it is completely different. And that's the thing which took me by surprise. It was, of course, I knew it was going to be quick, but I didn't realize it would be that quick. And on my first lap, basically, I was driving around, you know, I went flat into turn one, and then I went through turn two, turn three. At the time, like, it felt quick-ish, but I knew I was obviously building up to it. And then by turn four, my tires were so cold that I spanned straight away, went straight into the gravel track, and red flag, obviously, come back to the pit lane, all the TV cameras, you know, waiting for you. Ugh. And at that point, you're like, I'm in F1, aren't I? Yeah. Like, you, just the exposure you have towards the fans and to the media, I was like, well, okay. And, you know, the team told me, right, okay, then don't worry about it. We'll get the gravel out. But next time you go around, you got to go faster because obviously the tires are getting cold. So you just, because you span, you need to drive quicker. And it's one of them things which at the beginning was like, okay, so I just had a crash and now I got to drive faster to not crash. And that's it, really. You know, that's how it started. And actually the first day getting into the car, it was just one of them feelings where it was so amazing, so incredible to drive these cars. They were so refined. I give the feeling more towards, it's like you're driving a racing game in real life rather than anything else. You know, the cars just do what you want them to do. They're so intuitive in how they drive. It was impressive.
Did you have a sort of, when you were lining up on the grid for the first time, getting ready, balaclava on, helmet, looking around, sat in the cockpit, did you have a moment where you're just like, Jesus Christ, I'm on the F1 grid here, I'm about to do my first race? Or are you like professional in the zone?
A bit of both. You're kind of starry-eyed, that is for sure. You know, I grew up just like everyone else, must be like you two, watching Formula One religiously and watching the track walks, watching Martin Brundle walk up and down the grid and giving everyone an interview. And there I was being interviewed, doing all that kind of thing. It was in Australia. Obviously, I got no sleep that night just because I was so nervous about the whole thing. The only thing I say is once you get your helmet on, it's almost like this barrier that you cross where, at least for me personally speaking, it's like you get all the nerves, all the jitters. I think your heart rate's at 190, right? And once that helmet goes on, it's everything goes quiet, everything goes still. You're in full control. You feel like you've done this a million times and you're ready to do the business. And once that green light goes, that's it. You know, you're off, you're away, you're fighting, and you're going back to what you do every day of your life, pretty much. So it's strange, but the most daunting thing for me in F1 was not the driving. Driving is actually the easiest thing. It's everything around that kind of, you know, it was like Hollywood level, Vegas level, where you're just kind of going around and it's all just times by 100. It was a very cool feeling, and I still remember that grid walk, the pit lane or the start procedure, everything. I remember it like it was yesterday, just because it was so clear, such a vivid memory.
It's so cool, and it's brilliantly articulated there. Now, you went on to be teammates with a certain Max Verstappen. Some would say luckily, some would say unluckily. How highly do you rate him as a driver now? Not as he was, but as he is now.
I'd say he's very much the most gifted driver I've ever raced against. And I think, you know, it's hard to say, you know, when you compare the greats, it's a tricky one. But, you know, his driving does the talking. There's no politics in how he talks or how he speaks. He's very straight to the point. He's very relaxed. And I would say, most probably, I've always been interested in the fact that he's not really never, you know, Netflix or whatever, he's never really touched. And people don't really see the side to him. People don't really know the side to him. But yeah, you know, I've been with him, and he can be so relaxed that it's almost like, I wish I could be like that, you know? Yeah. The guy's opening like FIFA packs before qualifying, and you're like, you're in a different level. But But no, he is very impressive. And even, I think more than that, is the way he drives the cars. You know, he's very precise, but what he wants in a car is very different to most drivers. He wants a car that is so sharp into a corner. It's unbelievable. And he really likes to play with the car. But when you look at the steering, it looks super smooth, but it's not. I can tell you that car is extremely sharp. And yeah, it's a secret to his speed. I think I raced against drivers. I've been teammates.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With Charles, driven in the same cars as a lot of good drivers. I've always been known for someone who loves front-end grip, who loves to be able to put the car where he wants it. And then this guy comes in and he makes me look like I want a car like a bus, you know. I was like, wow, okay, this thing's very different. But he is very good.
It's fascinating actually hearing that sort of first-hand experience, which you don't actually hear too much. It's always people outside of the team or outside of the car looking in. So you never quite get the full picture of Max. And as you say, with the lack of Netflix exposure, perhaps you don't feel like you quite know who he is. But that's the way he chooses to live and be, and you have to respect that. And clearly, he's pretty fast. Obviously, tough time at Red Bull. Some really high moments, some not so great moments. It ended up with you leaving and going to DTM for a year, but then you came back with Williams for the start of this year to replace George Russell. That must have been obviously an awesome feeling. We talked about how your initial getting into Formula One with Toro Rosso was so last minute and unexpected. How did this conversation go? Were you expecting it? Was there a glint in your eye, hopeful?
A very quick interruption to remind you to check out our sponsors, Motus One, the event transportation company. Motus One is the industry leader in complex transport management from hospitality, talent, production crews, VIPs, and artist transport. Motus One's team have got you covered. They've also launched their leading-edge cloud-based event transportation management system called Motus Ride. Now you can manage your entire event transport program digitally. Make bookings, allocate rides, create approval processes, see reports, track costs, loads more. Head over to motus1.com and hear how they can support your event transportation needs. Back to the show.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, you know, my first year was actually a really good year. And I got into the main team in 6 months because of how good the year went. And I think in some respects, most probably people forget how strong of a year year one was. And obviously, I had a tough time in year two. Just started to lose the feeling with the car. It started to get a bit tricky on me. And all that front that I talked about before became incredibly strange and difficult to drive in year two. And during that year away, you know, I had a lot of time to think about it, to process what I needed to do better. And at the same time, work really hard with the team and improve the car that I drove, which in the end, maybe I played a 1% part in it. But, you know, we got the car into a better place for 21, and obviously Max won the championship. So I'd like to think a part of that was why, you know, Jos considered me and looking at the development of the car, I got very involved in it back at Red Bull. And as you see with Williams, you know, we're an up and coming team, and we are improving, and we do need support. We need ideas, and we want to raise our game and be fighting in the midfield. So I felt like I could definitely bring that to the team and work with the team and you know, be long term in that side and think about, you know, how can we do this? And fortunately for me, driving a different car gives me a very different angle to someone who's just most probably driven the same car their whole life. And so I could see straight away the limitations of the car and understand, you know, where we need to improve. And I think, yeah, it was a great fit, really.
Yeah.
Obviously, for me, there was a lot of drivers in contention for that seat. I had to make sure that I was the number one favourite.
And we're very happy that you're there. Now, Williams is obviously a very historic team, a hugely popular team that everybody wants to see doing well. There hasn't been a success over the last few years. However, it's under new management, new ownership. There's this period of transition. Yes, there's been challenges, but there's also been glimpses of improvement. You've picked up some points, which is fantastic. Getting up to speed with the new regs, it's not easy. But how's the vibe inside the team? What's the sort of feeling within the group about the future?
Yeah, so obviously, firstly, I mean, you guys must really see it. You know, we have very good investment coming in. You know, in terms of the blueprint for going forwards, it's very positive. We got the money. We are making changes behind the scenes, and things are going in the right direction. It takes time. I think people forget that. It's actually, I didn't realize it until now. Is you know, big changes like that, for things to happen, especially in F1, it takes a long time. With gardening leaves going for ages, you know, and even just getting the right people in place, it can take years. But we're in the right, what's the word? We're going in the right direction, basically, and things are looking positive. I think as a team as well, you know, we're hungry. We don't want to be where we are. We started the season. Obviously, everyone has that hope that, you know, they come up with a good idea, and with the regulations so open and so new, you hope to have the right idea. We most probably missed the mark a little bit on that side, so we had a bit of a bit of catching up to do. But as you can see, you know, we brought in a whole new car midway through the season. We are playing still catch up. We're still learning about the new package, but it feels like right now we have a really good platform. We've got the right philosophy through. I think, you know, we took a lot of course, inspiration from other cars as well. And it's an exciting time to be in Formula One, because at the end of the day, the regulations are so new, so fresh. No one really knows what, you know, the right way to go is. Everyone has an idea. And of course, it looks like Ferrari and Red Bull right now are the ones that are the most clued up in what's going on. But because it's so new, it's so open, there's so much opportunity for ideas and catch up to be had. A lot of the time when you spend 4 or 5 years with the same regulation, teams get put into a tunnel where they've refined their package so much that they can't really do much. If they have a limitation in the car, they would have to change a lot of things to be able to do that. Whereas now, because it is so open, so new, you know, we pretty much changed complete philosophy in 6 months. And you can get away with that. And that's exciting. You know, and that's where the drivers as well, we've become a big part of that. Our feedback is so important, because there's so much going on that, you know, the team need to hear our opinion and know what direction they need to go to, especially with the budget caps. You have to be so selective with what you do.
And Williams have taken a step forward this year. I think it's fair to say, you know, a couple of points finishes for yourself, qualifying, going well in and around the top 12 sometimes too. Nicky Hill's yes. Getting into Q3 in Silverstone. Yes, mixed conditions, but you're there, you're in the mix, and you're fighting a lot more than what we've seen in the last couple of years. So we're at sort of the halfway point before half term, aren't we? Yeah. How are you hopeful of what can come in the second half of the season? Are you hopeful there's going to be some big gains, or is it, again, like you said, just going to be incremental, slowly pushing forward each race?
You summed up well. So at the minute, right now, the way I see it, you know, we have to do everything perfectly to get into Q2 to get into points. We have to think outside the box. We have to think of different strategies, you know, take risks with whatever it may be, with fuel, with tires, whatever, you know. And right now it's like everything just has to go perfect for us to sneak in. A couple of tenths is all it takes to get into that midfield pack. You know, I think the worst position we finished outside of DNFs is 13th. It's not like we've had bad races at all. But that's the difference. You know, the midfield is so close. If we can just get them 2-3 tenths, it puts us in that zone where suddenly we're fighting with the group. And as you see, it's actually a very exciting midfield battle, I think. You know, everyone's chopping and changing. No one really understands why it's so up and down, but that's that's perfect. You know, that's it's because that everything is so new that people aren't really understanding, you know, why the cars are good in certain circuits. So it's not going to happen overnight. We are going to need, you know, it's going to take bit by bit for us to get there. And yeah, you know, that's our goal as well. We know that we've got a bit of catching up to do. And the other thing I'd say is everyone's doing updates, everyone's improving. So you have to improve faster than they do, which is tricky. You know, everyone's got hundreds and hundreds of people working at their factories. It's a huge team effort. So you need to basically out-develop your car to them. And that's the art of it. These cars from the start of the year to the end of the year, they are so much quicker that you guys don't really see because everyone's just doing the same kind of improvements.
Yeah. Now, we're rapidly running out of time, so we're going to fire some questions at you. We usually ask a final three that we ask all our guests, but in this instance, we're going to change tack slightly and we're going to have our listener questions powered by Motus One and Grid Rival, our two sponsors. There was a huge response on Twitter for questions, and we've got millions, so we're going to have to pluck out one or two. So I'm going to start off, Harry. I'm going to go with, this is from Fiona Ramblings on Twitter. Alex, great name. If you could pick any former Williams driver to be your teammate, who would it be?
Oh, okay. Judging by my history, as listening to the beginning, it's maybe a little bit more selected because I don't know as many Williams drivers as I should do. But I'd say I'm not sure if this is a good idea or a bad idea, but I'd love to have Montoya as a teammate.
Fiery.
Yeah.
Fiery. I just want to see what happens. You know,
watch the fireworks.
As long as it's not directed at me, bring it on. Yeah. You know,
you're just there with the popcorn, ready to enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just sit down and have a good time. As long as there's, I remember, have you ever seen that video where he's got the cameraman, the cameraman hits him in the face?
Yes.
And his wife, I think, at the time, I don't know, she's like, stay cool. Anyway. Good times.
Well, good luck with that pairing. An interesting one that came in from Finley ML151, which I found interesting. Anyway, obviously, we touched on it very briefly. You spent a year in DTM. Was there anything that you learned in that year in DTM, driving and racing in that category, that you've brought over into Formula One?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think more than anything, the way I see it is it's hard really to say, well, I definitely improved this or this. What driving other cars gives you is almost like it's like reading books or whatever it may be. It extends your racing vocabulary, like in a way that the more things you drive, the more experience you have understanding how to get speed out of a car. Driving quickly, purely in a very simple term, is because you understand how to go around a corner quicker than someone else. That's literally it. And if you can drive different things, rally cars, GT3 cars, whatever it may be, go-karts, and you understand how to finesse that art and be quick in that car, then, you know, you've understood something. And, you know, it all counts towards whatever you're driving. So even in a Formula One car, you know, I know a lot of drivers, they'll go out, do ice rallies and stuff like this because you're learning about different angles, slip angles, whatever, and yeah, it helps. So I think that's the main thing. You know, I drove a car GT3 cars, they're beasts. Like they're heavy, they have ABS, they have traction control. I didn't get along that well with it because I felt like I was driving to the limit of electronics rather than to the limit of the grip. It was almost like I had to understand what the electronics were trying to do rather than what the tires were trying to do. And it was tricky, but it made me really have to have an open mind, something very different to Formula One in the way that you get that time. And I think it just helps that side to it. So when I have a kid, I think the first thing I would be doing, if they wanted to be a racing driver, would be to get them driving all kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
really try and get them into as much things. You've seen, as I said before, karts, rally, whatever, maybe Maybe not two wheel stuff, because that's kind of dangerous.
Oh, so dangerous. So dangerous. But, yeah. Now we had, as Harry mentioned, loads and loads of questions. I'm just going to shout out a couple of people that did send in questions that we haven't had time to ask. Jonty's Corner, Imi Cousins, Finley ML 151, JP1 Design, Max 2223, Cat, and so on. Thank you all so much for sending in your questions. Apologies, we don't have time to get through them all. Our final question for you, Alex, and one that we do ask all of our guests, and you can be as deep or as light as you like. What are you scared of?
Heights. Oh, and rats.
Right away.
Rats. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I heights is quite a simple one. And I'm not scared of being in a machine. So planes, roller coasters, they're not scary to me. Myself, though, if I'm walking on a cliff edge, I don't trust my body. I don't trust a gust of wind.
Would you do a bungee jump?
No.
Don't.
No,
it's horrible.
No. Or skydiving, I think, would be a step too far. But I would like to do it just to get me through. You heard of Will Smith, how he talks about it and gets through his comfort zone. So heights, no go. And rats, I don't know why I've got this phobia about rats. It's weird, but I used to live in Milton Keynes, and there used to be a lake nearby, and I used to run around the lake, and especially in winter time, used to run around the lake, and these rats would just run past you, and it would freak me out. My heart rate, I would be going for a low conditioned run, and then my heart rate would spike. It ended up being interval training by the end of it. I hated it. But yeah.
No one has got a good thing to say about Milton Keynes, it seems, over the last few years. There's always something.
I would say it teach. Yeah, exactly. Any chicane, I feel like I'm pretty good at now.
Yeah,
experience I've had. When I learned how to drive, get my driving license, I had a Mini, and I would race everyone in my Mini. My alloys were completely destroyed as I was clipping all the curbs and the roundabouts. But it was good fun, you know. You'd race against all these Porsches and Audis and stuff. I had two people lose their brakes and crash on roundabouts. I don't know if I should be saying that.
We don't condone this, children.
We don't condone that.
The thing what people realize is it's legal because it's 70 miles an hour between each roundabout in Milton Keynes.
That's the joke, isn't it?
And you can't actually get to 70 in most cases. Like if you go flat from, especially in a Mini, you can't really reach 70 in between the two roundabouts. No. So you're legal, right?
Yeah.
Milton Keynes is basically a big racetrack. Yeah. Is what you're saying.
Yeah. I was with George one time. He had a Polo, he was trying to show off basically, and I was his
of course
passenger.
He was. Was his top off as well?
I mean, if it was just me in the car, his top was off. Then it'd be I don't know what he's trying to do, but he went in, and the roundabout tightened up. Each roundabout slightly different in Milton Keynes. That's the trick to be quick. You just got to understand the space you have on the exit. And this one was a tight one, and he didn't realize that. And we'd go up on the grass, and we're heading towards the guardrails. And he manages it. He gets it back onto the road.
Fair play, George. Good call.
Fair play, George. It was a good effort.
Yeah, play George, and that's what got on the Mercedes drive.
So was behind us in the rental.
Exactly. Look, Alex, that we could talk to you all day, especially about Milton Keynes, but we'll have to stop it there. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. Thank you to Williams for letting us sort this out on the weekend of the Hungarian Grand Prix. Best of luck for this weekend and the rest of the season, and we hope we get to chat soon. But Alex Albon, thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast.
Cheers, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the podcast. Before you leave us, one final reminder to check out the guys and girls at Motus One, your new transportation solution for minor, mega, and signature events anywhere in the world. Motus One simplifies the complex process of event transportation and provides clients with unrivaled service and support to ensure your event transportation needs are fulfilled. Check them out today at motusone.com. And if you tell them you found them through the Motormouth podcast, you'll get up to 20% off your first booking.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.